Rocking up to fucking Independence in a toilet which actually called Sugar Creek, fucking Missouri. I'm gonna throw you away with a glitch, you bad habit, fucking piece of fucking garbage.
Live from the evolutionary.org basement headquarters. This is evolution.org raw podcast.
You sound tight.
We got your host Steve Smee and the Mason, where we come to you straight with our Q&A. No bullshit, just raw, hardcore, uncensored.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to BioWars 3 Raw TV today.
Welcome, everybody, back to the nest.
This past fucking 2 days, I've had the police come inform me of a fucking plan to have me killed for my ex-wife and her husband. You just ruined your whole goddamn weekend. You just shortened your fucking life and your fucking minutes, your fucking number, unless you tell me why the fuck you're calling me right in your fucking mouth. You called me, and now you're part of a conspiracy to fucking kill me, too.
Hey, what's up, guys? We have a great episode ahead. We have the Mason. What do you think about that intro, Mason?
Buddy, I'm not sure. I thought I was just like a guest on two or three other podcasts, so I'm glad to hear you and not a couple of those other guys.
All right, sounds good. So we're going to open up the show. First off, we want to give our condolences. Trevor, who we do the regular podcast with, he announced on the prior podcast that he had a death in his family. And we want to kind of talk about this because this is something we're all going to have to experience. And I want to kind of get Matt in on this. My experience with this is my grandfather, who I was very close with, he passed away when I was a teenager. And, you know, it really hit home for me when my grandma came to visit and he wasn't with her. That's when it really hit home for me. So it's one of those situations where, you know, it may not hit home at first, and then it's one of those situations where it kind of hits home later. So, you know, losing a family member, it's all something we have to deal with. I had an ex, my ex-fiance, she lost her fiance of 8 years in a car accident, and she was actually driving down the road, and she saw fire. And she pulled over and she saw it was his car. He had basically been driving drunk and had gotten into an accident with another family. And he passed away, which was ironic because he himself worked in emergency, emergency division. So the people who actually went to the vehicle were actually his coworkers to try to save his life. So it's kind of an ironic situation. And it's something that she never got over. And it kind of put a strain on our relationship. And she still had his clothes in the closet. She still had memorabilia from him. Just mementos to make her remember him. So, you know, these types of situations, you never get over them. You never get over deaths. You know, from family members like this. So the only thing I can suggest is you've got to be strong. You got to be strong for your family, and you got to kind of help the rest of your family get through it. So again, heartfelt condolences to our pal Trevor and his family. And we want to dedicate this episode of Raw to Trevor for sure. So Matt, I'm going to give you the floor on this, because you have lost family members very close to you. And, you know, let's, you know, what do you have to say on this? I'm going to give you the floor.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's so different because it's not like, you know, when you grow up, you go to school because you're learning things. You're learning, you know, how to get to the next stage of your school career. Then you're learning how to get a job. And, you know, you're learning how to happen, but you can't really learn about family members dying because there's no timetable on it. You know, it happens suddenly, like in Trevor's case, that it wasn't expected, where somebody, you know, passes away. And so it's not like everybody just gets to where they're 80 years old, 85, and then they pass away. It doesn't work that way. So you really there is no schooling for it. You know, we don't learn how to deal with it. Everybody deals with it different ways. Some people, you know, are able to get through it. Some people need a lot of help. It's just one of those areas that there's no blueprint on how to deal with it. So, I mean, when we've talked about this before, the advice that I always give is you need to deal with it, but you need to deal with it in your own way. Because I'll tell you what won't happen is you won't be able to, you know, just push it aside and, you know, work like crazy and be at the gym and try to, you know, just get through it. You can't do that. It'll eventually come back to bite you. You have to actually deal with it. It's just the way our brains work. They won't let us not grieve. So you have to actually grieve. But don't let anybody tell you how you have to do that. Everybody wants to help you. Your family will want to help you if it's somebody really close to you. And there's going to be times where they're, you know, they annoy you and you just want to be left alone. So that can get tricky too, because, you know, you have to understand they do mean well. They're not trying to do that to you, but, you know, you do need your time alone if that's what you want. It's the thing that I tell people, if you know somebody that's lost someone or they're grieving for whatever reason, try to avoid telling them how to feel or telling them what they should feel or what they should do, because people are very sensitive. They'll take it the wrong way and it'll upset them. If you tell somebody, you know, you'll get over it. Probably a horrible thing you could say. If you tell them, I think you should go take a vacation, then that's going to bother them, because they're going to say, well, that's the last thing I want to do because you're telling me to do it. You know, so you have to, the best thing I could say to do is to let the person know that you're there for whatever they need. A good friend of mine from my kid's hockey circle, he lost his brother about two weeks ago. He was in his late 40s and died suddenly. Same thing. And nobody knew it was coming. And that's kind of what I told him. I said, hey, whatever you need, you know, I'm here. Let me know if you need anything and that I'm thinking about you. And that's it. That's kind of where I left it. And, you know, if I hear that he's not well, then I'll kind of look into it. But, you know, you just don't want to push it. You don't want to, you know, get people into the wrong mindset, because they're very, very vulnerable at that time. And, you know, the other thing is the actual time frame. You know, like, it takes people, some people shorter and some people longer times to actually work through these things. So you have to, it's hard, but you just have to be ultra mindful and sensitive of how people are feeling when they go through something like that.
Yeah, you bring up a good point about that. I don't know if you ever watched the movie Mystic River with Sean Penn, award-winning movie. But there was a scene in there where his father-in-law, his daughter dies, and his father-in-law basically comes and tells him, you know, to get over it, whatever. So here's a clip from the scene.
Hey, you'll come through, because you're a man. Like I said, down about you, wouldn't they? He said, you got yourself a real old school man there.
And, you know, of course, Sean Penn's character got very upset with him. He's like, dude, you know, my daughter just died, and you're fucking telling me, you know, that I'm going to get over it because I'm a man, blah, blah, blah. So it wasn't the father-in-law's grandchild. It was Sean Penn's daughter from a previous marriage. So that's an example of what the Mason was talking about, being insensitive to people. And, you know, I had that actually happen too, when my dog died, and people are like, it's just a dog. It's just a dog. And they kind of blew it off as nothing. Well, you know, it's when you care for something for 15 years and then one day it's gone, it's not just as simple as a dog, you know? And in a lot of ways, a dog, you know, breaks your heart losing a pet more than losing, you know, a distant relative, like a cousin or something, or an uncle, you know, because you never see them. You know, but your pet, you're feeding them every day and doing everything. So it's a really hard situation. And losing a child is the hardest, you know, hardest situation because of that reason. You know, you're caring for the child every day. So that's why you see so many domestic problems when it comes to divorce and who gets custody of the children and people killing each other over custody of the children and stuff. So it can be a very tough situation. So what's your final advice, Matt, when it comes to stuff like this? I notice, you know, when it comes to like funerals and stuff, every time I go to a funeral, there's always someone in charge. You know, you always got that person who's in charge, whether they're the sibling or the parent or the kid or something. They kind of take charge of the whole family. Some people are more, you know, leaders when it comes to that. Some people aren't. But I think that would be the best thing someone could do, is kind of, you know, take charge of the situation and kind of ease the pressure off the family, because there's so, you know, death is so complicated. You know, when there's so much that goes into it and stuff. So it it really pays to kind of help the family out and kind of, you know, be the leader of the family in that situation.
Yeah, the last things I'll say, I mean, just think about the money and the possessions part of it. So the money, if it's not expected and that person doesn't have things planned, funerals are very expensive. So be mindful of that for the family or whoever has to deal with it. The other thing is, respect people's possessions and don't fight over possessions. When somebody is, you know, old, you know, 80, 90 years old, and you know the time's coming, don't put post-it notes on items in their house claiming them for when they die. That's disgusting, and I've seen that happen before. And when somebody does die and I see their sibling or their kids that are left, or I guess it could be siblings, any family members left that are fighting over the possessions they left, it drives me nuts, because there's nothing more disrespectful than, you know, worrying about worldly possessions when you just lost a loved one. I could care less if I ever, when my parents go, if I get anything, it doesn't matter to me. Like, does that make it up? It doesn't. And then you're going to fight with somebody about it. You know, you see families torn apart, brothers and sisters stop speaking because their parents died. And I want the big grandfather clock, so I'm going to be pissed off and never talk to you again. It's disgusting. You know, you got to put that stuff aside. It's never worth it. You know, it's never worth fighting about something like that.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot actually. And, with families getting mad at each other or stupid shit like that. It's kind of dumb. My attitude is, I don't need nothing. If a relative of mine dies, I don't want any of their shit. You know, so if someone is like that, look, they can have it. I really don't care. So I don't need anyone's shit. So they can, you know, they can take it, and, you know, good for them. So, our next topic is job. Interviews, how to improve your job situation, all that good stuff. And Matt's gone, has a recent experience in this. I don't. I can only go back to when I was in college, going for my interview. And the thing I did, my uncle gave me some really good advice as a teenager when it comes to stuff like this, because my cousin had went for a job and totally fucked up the job interview, because, you know, they asked them, they're like, why do you want to work here? And his answer was like, oh, I've always wanted to do this ever since I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And my uncle told me, he's like, that was really, really dumb to say. And he said, a much better thing to say, if you get asked that question, is you compliment the business, say it's a very well-run business, you know about the business, you do your homework. So you say, you know, you guys have the latest software, you have some awesome software, I've seen your software, you have an awesome website, you just compliment the company, compliment the way it's run, and know your shit about the company. Say, yeah, your company was based in New York and you've expanded, and I've followed your company for years, and it's a very good opportunity. I feel like I can help the company grow, blah, blah, blah. And that's what I said in my interview, and the owner of the company was extremely impressed by that response. And I think I was probably the only person ever to tell him something like that. So there are 80 applicants, and they only picked 8 people. And I was one of the people they picked. And I was actually the youngest person they picked. And I think that interview, nailing that interview, helped a lot. Obviously, you want to be on time. Obviously, you want to dress professionally. You don't have to dress good. You don't have to wear like a $10,000 suit. But just dress professionally and put in effort. You know, comb your hair, shave your beard. You want to look good. You don't want to have like nose rings and neck tattoos showing and all that stuff. Yeah, it makes a difference, guys. I'm sorry, but first impressions are important. If someone walks in and I'm interviewing someone and they got like nose rings popping out of their nose and like an eyebrow ring and all that shit, I'm sorry. You know, that's not very clean cut. You see what I'm saying? So you have to be clean cut when you go in for an interview. So get rid of all your jewelry. Don't go in there wearing like some big gold jewelry and flashy jewelry and shit. You know, just be professional. It makes a difference. And employers look for that. They look for people who are punctual. If the interview is at 10 o'clock and you show up at 10:15, that's not going to fly. You need to make sure you're early. Get there like at 9:30. Be there early. Take it seriously. And I'll let Matt take it on for this because he has some recent experience and he wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, I think this is a really good one because a lot of you guys listening are, you know, in the 18 to 30 year range. You know, so you're going to be doing pretty serious interviews that are really going to potentially lead you to your long-term career. And this can mean big money. You know, if you're in for a good job and you screw it up, you're going to be pissed off. You know, so there's just a few things, you know. So with the preparation part, so Steve mentioned get there early. That's an easy one. You don't need to go into the interview a half an hour early, but, you know, go in, you know, 5 minutes before it's supposed to start, maybe 10, no earlier than that. And that way they know you're ready. Don't even bring your phone in with you because nobody wants to see you distracted playing on your phone. Just kind of sit there, wait, and, you know, get an idea of what everything's like in there. Get an idea of what, you know, what it looks like in that. Before you even go to the interview, do some research on the company and understand how they're operating, understand their social media presence. Do they advertise? You know, are they selling things? What kind of company is it? How were they founded? Just get an idea of how they operate compared to some of their competitors. And then think about a few things and really plan them out. This isn't like a 5 minute thing. This is a long preparation. Think about a bunch of reasons why you're the perfect fit and a bunch of reasons why you're not a good fit, because they're going to want to know, you know, they're going to be able to point out things based on your resume, why you're not a good fit. So if you're prepared ahead of time, you can have an answer. You can have a rebuttal ready, you know, to kind of put those to the side. And with the good and the bad, have specifics, you know, have examples. When they ask you why you're a good fit, don't just say, I'm in the top 5 in this category in my company right now. Well, what does that even mean? You know, give specific examples of, let me tell you, this is a time when this happened and this is what I did and these were the results, blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to actually have specifics planned out for you. Obviously dressing nice. Don't smell. Don't smell good. Don't smell bad. Just be clean. Just make sure you had a shower. They don't want you to come in smelling like you were just, you know, smoking, or you just put a whole liter of cologne on yourself. Like, it's just distracting. Anything distracting is not going to be good. So you're going to get there. You're going to go into the interview. There's a way you want to portray yourself. We talk about confidence a lot on this podcast. It's the same thing in the fitness world. Same thing being a man. It's how you want to be in an interview. You want to be confident. You don't want to be cocky, and you don't want to act like you're taking things lightly, because they'll trap you and they'll catch you on that. But you do want to appear confident. You want to be in control throughout the whole interview. And just remember that an interview is basically a sale. You know, you're trying to sell yourself to the company. And so you have to treat it that way. So just be mindful of what you're saying, that you're always, you know, putting yourself out there that way. And then kind of to wrap it up, you're going to have an idea, the time frame of the interview. So when you know it's getting close to that time and you can tell they're probably trying to wrap it up, don't overstay your welcome. You know, let things kind of close up normally, naturally, as they should. And the last thing you want to do, and this will impress them, I promise you, before you leave, they're always going to say, do you have any questions for us? And everybody says no. Nobody says, yeah, I have questions. What you want to do, have a couple questions. A really good question to ask is, do you have any concerns or any reasons why you think I would not be a good fit for this role? Are there any red flags on my resume that jump out at you? That will impress them when you ask a question like that. So definitely throw it out there. And then after your interview, the last thing you're going to want to do is just send a quick follow-up email. You know, thanks for your time. I'm interested in the position. I really enjoyed talking to you about it. I look forward to hearing from you in the next couple days. The most important part about that is to check your grammar and your spelling, because that could seal your fate. If it's full of errors, it just shows that you didn't even take the time to proofread it. So, you know, what kind of an employee would you be? So that's kind of, those are kind of all my tips.
I can look back to my interview, the question when he asked me, do you have any questions? The question I asked him, because this job was in a downtown city, and I can remember it took me, you know, forever to find parking, and I actually had to use a meter to park. And that's not really realistic when you have a 7-hour, you know, workday to use a meter. So my question to him was, where am I supposed to park? You know, that was my question. And I think he was kind of taken aback by that question, but it was actually a really good question, because it's like, dude, seriously, where am I supposed to park? If I'm working here 5 days a week, do you expect me to use a meter and put quarters in, like go to my car and keep putting quarters in? So that's kind of a funny story. But back then it was so different compared to now. Now everything's over the internet. There's people doing job interviews through Skype now. So things have changed a lot. I'm kind of, you know, look back to those days, because I remember they follow-up called me after my first interview for my second interview, and the guy actually called my home phone. And now I haven't even had a home phone in like, I don't know, 15 years. So that's another funny thing. I didn't even have a cell phone at that time. I still had a home phone. So that just tells you how far we've come, you know, with interviews and stuff like that. So not only do you have to be good in person in interviews, but you also have to be good through online, through a webcam. So that's kind of funny. So we have a Fix My Cycle Bro question that came into Matt.
Yeah, we got a question of a guy. He's not running anything. He doesn't have specific doses yet, but he just has a question on running two compounds together. Steve, I'll let you hit this one first after I read. It says, hey guys, just curious, completely hypothetical. If running Tren and Primo together would be effective or inefficient? I've read that they fight for the same receptors and that Tren always takes the cake. Again, completely hypothetical. I'm just interested in each of the compounds individually and curious if running them together someday would be a great thing or a waste of money. I've got a ways to go before I run Tren. I'm currently running Primo alone by itself right now and love it, but I'm curious in the future if it would even be worth it. Thanks. So Steve, what would you recommend setting those two up together as a cycle?
Yeah, they're actually perfect together. Primo is your mild, anabolic, you know, low side effect compound, and Tren is your androgenic, harsh, high side effect compound. So the way you'd run it is run Tren at 150 to 200 milligrams a week, and then run the Primo wild, 400, 500, 600 milligrams a week. And that will actually give a little, very good kind of synergy together, running them that way. The other good thing about Primo is it will boost your immune system while Tren will suppress your immune system. So it's another good reason why Primo stacks really good with Tren. So I think it's a really good, it's actually a really, really good cycle. So you should roll with it. And the nice thing about it is you don't have to run an AI, because neither will aromatize into estrogen. So I think it's a perfect cycle. Well, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's actually, those are two really good things to stack together. So you'd run it like that, those dosages, no AI. I'd run N2Guard with it, because you need to protect your organs, need to help with your side effects. I would run the Tren for 8 weeks, and then I would continue with the Primo for 12 weeks total. Now, a lot of guys are like, oh, you should run Primo longer. Well, it's not really, you know, I understand where you're coming from, people who say that. But the thing is, like, if you run Primo any longer than that, you're going to shut yourself down for a long time. And it's going to take you very long to recover from that. So it's okay to cut it a little short and leave room for later. You're not trying to build Rome overnight here. So kind of like stop trying to think that you're supposed to turn into the next Ronnie Coleman after one cycle. It's not going to make a difference if you run at 12 or 16. It's not going to change your physique, you know, overnight regardless. But it is going to shut you down very, very hard and for a very long time. So I always encourage guys to cut cycles down to 12 weeks, even if it's a long ester in a very mild compound, to leave yourself room. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's funny with Primo. I think it's similar to Anavar in that it's more mild. So for some reason, instead of guys taking it for what it is, they just figure I'll run it at really high doses, or just I'll run it crazy long. Well, you don't have to do that. You could just run a different compound. You know, you could just run Tren and test and run your Tren really high and run it for 12 weeks if that's what you want. But if you want to get the most out of Primo for what it is, you know, run the doses that Steve gave you. That's way better, you know, 500 to 600 milligrams Primo, and keep the Tren low. You know, 200 milligrams is more than enough. But if your expectations are there, it'll be perfect. You know, it'd be a great cycle. I think the guys that think they got to run it crazy long, like, the ester doesn't dictate that. 12 weeks is plenty. You're not really leaving anything on the table by not running it longer. You know, you need to let your body recover when you're running these things. Like, too often we think they're a joke, and because they're so easy to get, right? They're not dangerous. They're not, you know, they're just like candy, but it's not true. When you're doing anything for 12 weeks, you know, your body's really stressed out. So, I mean, I think it could be a great cycle if you run it properly. Keep it reasonable. As Steve said, you don't have to use an AI, which there aren't many cycles you're going to put together that you don't need one. You know, this is one of the very few that are like that. So, you know, take advantage of that. And, you know, I think it could be great. I like this guy's thinking that he's trying the Primo first and he's really enjoying it. He's, you know, admitting the trend is for down the road. So I like his mindset. So hopefully by the time he does decide to throw the Tren in there, he's ready to go, because it sounds like he's not in a rush. He's taking it time. So, yeah, I definitely run it too.
Well, I hear a sound. So we have a mail that came in, and it's from a gentleman. He says that he is starting Ramadan, and he wants to know if it will affect his gains and what we recommend for that situation. So I mentioned it to Matt, and Matt didn't know what Ramadan was. I admittedly don't know a lot about it, so I kind of looked into it, and I know you did too, Matt. And it starts mid-May, and it goes for 1 month. And during Ramadan, you're not supposed to eat from sunrise to sunset. And I've also read it's like an hour before sunrise and an hour after sunset. So something like that. So basically during the day, you're not allowed to eat. Okay? or drink. You can't eat or drink at all. So this guy wants to know, will this affect his gains? Can he still work out, et cetera, et cetera? So, Matt, what did you find from what you looked up on this?
Yeah, so all I really knew was that it was a holy month. That's as generic as I knew. And you know what? If you're doing this for religious purposes, I wouldn't worry too much about gains. You know, worry about what you're doing it for. It's obviously important enough that you're not going to eat for a whole, you know, basically the whole day for a month. That's a big deal. So I wouldn't put losing gains at the top of your priority list if this is kind of, if this is your religion. You know, that to me, that's a much bigger part of your life. What I found, and this is the part I actually really like. So when they have their first meal of the day, it's generally a very large meal, which makes sense. Very high protein and drinking a lot of water. Completely makes sense, you know, to help you get through as much of the day with as much fuel as you can, hydrate you as much as you can. Completely makes sense. The part I really like is when they break the fast at night, it's usually just a very, very small meal, almost a snack. And I think that's really cool because, I mean, we've talked about it on here. Steve's done a lot of fasts and he's talked about coming off of a fast. You don't want to have like a big meal or like some greasy ass food or anything like that. So I think this is a great way to do this every day for a month and not completely destroy your gut, you know? So they end up having a little bit of a snack and then have a meal, you know, an hour or even later in the night. So I think that's a really good way to do it. I think what can you do to prevent losing your gains? There's not a whole lot you can really do. I mean, are you going to lose a little bit? Probably. You're likely going to be in a caloric deficit. So you just have to be okay with it. It's only a month out of your life. You know, it's not like you're going to lose years worth of hard work that you put in. So definitely train. There's no reason not to work out. You know, if you're not doing a lot of other stuff, you might as well anyways. You know, it's only going to keep you in good shape. It's going to keep you healthy. So, you know, I guess the safest thing you could do is just get as many calories in the morning and as many calories in at night if that's, you know, your priority. But just be careful you're not, you know, because you could still end up putting on a lot of fat that way too. If you stuff your gut full right before bed every night for a month and you're just eating as much as you can, that's probably not going to be the best way to do it. So I would almost take it as, you know, this is like a spiritual thing. You're doing it for religious purposes. Put the all the other stuff aside, enjoy it, get through it, and then after the month, you can kind of look at it as more of like a, you know, a mental victory and a spiritual victory to, you know, that you accomplished something like that, because not everybody could do that for a month.
You know what? This isn't really that hard. Like, people like think about this like, "Oh, this is tough." Blah blah blah. It really isn't. And like working out and stuff, look, if you're going to work out and like sweat, you're going to be losing electrolytes, okay? Salt, magnesium, potassium, your minerals, you know, and you're not going to be drinking water during your fast. You're not going to be taking any type of minerals back. So when I did my prolonged fast, I was still drinking water and I was still getting electrolytes during my prolonged fast. So it really wasn't a big deal. So if I was sweating during a workout, not a big deal, because I would be drinking water and getting back. I'd make my own electrolytes, some Himalayan pink salt, some cream of tartar for potassium, and some magnesium. And I would make my own electrolytes to get it back. But here you can't do that. So what do you do? It's so fucking simple. Like, so just basically you're going to wake up in the morning before sunrise and eat a big breakfast. Okay, and then sun is up, you can't eat or drink, no big deal. Make sure you hydrate before the sun comes up. Drink your water, make sure you hydrate. I mean, you should be hydrating regardless when you wake up in the morning. And then in the evening, if you want to get in a really, really hard workout where you're sweating, delay the workout closer to sunset. This way, when you get the workout in, then you can hydrate after the sun goes down, right after your workout or during your workout. Workout at sunset. This way, when by the time the workout is over, it'll be dark, and then you'll be able to hydrate, and you can eat a post-workout meal. No problem. So it really isn't that big a deal. The only problem I see with this strategy is sleep. Like, because you're waking up early to eat, and then you're working out really late, and then eating really even later, and that's kind of cutting into your sleep. So I kind of see that. So the best thing you could do is get in a nap like in the middle of the day. Or on the weekends when you're not working, get in a nap in the middle of the day to kind of, you know, get back your sleep. But that's going to be the hardest part of this. It's not the food issue, okay? I mean, really? Like, you can't go, like, fucking, you know, 10 hours without food? I mean, really? Or 12 hours without food? I mean, come on. I mean, that's not the hard part. The hard part is definitely, you know, how much is it going to affect your sleep? And that can actually affect your gains way more in this situation. So you have to figure that out. Is there a way you can sneak in an hour or two in the middle of the day nap to kind of make back the sleep that you're losing from having to wake up extra early and working out late and going to sleep late? Another option is you can do a light workout in the middle of the day as well. Because, you know, a light workout where you're not sweating, the dangerous part is if you are sweating, if you do a really hard workout and you're sweating in the middle of the day and it's hot, you're not going to be able to drink till after sunset. That is a problem. So you have to, if you do choose to work out, do not sweat. If you start breaking a sweat, you need to stop right away. Do not keep sweating, because that will be a problem. And you can actually dehydrate yourself. You can suffer from a lot of cramps because you won't have your hydration, electrolytes. So that would be the hard part. But this is certainly doable. You know, it's not that difficult. You know, I prolong fast for 19 days. So I kind of laugh that people can't go 10 or 12 hours without eating or drinking. That's kind of funny to me. But it is something that a lot of people do around the world. So, you know, it just proves like that, you know, this the idea behind this, and Matt brings up a good point, is you're taking a break, okay? So if it's that big a deal to you, then you can take, you know, just ease up on your workouts, you know? So you're kind of getting a break. It's one of the reasons Ramadan isn't just for religious reasons, but it's also health reasons. And it's also for spiritual reasons, where people are kind of protesting hunger, world hunger, and realizing how lucky they are to have food and abundant water. Because a lot of people around the world do not have that, do not have clean water, and do not have food at the edge of the fingertips. So, and a lot of Muslims in the United States are very, very successful. Like, a lot of doctors and lawyers and, you know, a lot of professionals are Muslim. A lot of Asian people who are of Asian descent, education is very important to them. So they do pursue advanced degrees and stuff like that. So, it's a good way for them to kind of come back down to earth and do it like that. So, but it's certainly doable. It's certainly doable. So, and you can still work out on it. There's really no excuse, you know, why it can't happen. So anything else to add, Matt, before we move on?
Yeah. The last thing I saw here, there was actually a study done about weight changes during Ramadan. And it turns out that it's actually notorious for weight gain, because of what I mentioned earlier about people stuffing themselves and then going right to bed. But what the study showed was that while most people did gain a little bit of weight, there are some people that actually lost a little bit of weight. But in all scenarios, everybody returned to what they were beforehand. So everybody kind of goes back to their normal weight, and that's whether you gain or you lose weight during that month. So when you're going into it, don't worry too much about weight gain, weight loss. It sounds like, based on the studies, everybody, quickly gets back to where they were when they go back to, you know, kind of eating the way they were beforehand.
So our final topic is improving training ideas. So let's talk about this a little bit. So one of the ways that we can kind of improve our workouts is by doing kind of the pyramid principle. And that basically, instead of going in there and doing like 3 or 4 sets with 8 reps per set, why not do like kind of pyramid it? So you're basically increasing the weight and then decreasing the amount of reps for every, you know, for you're increasing the weight and you're kind of going to almost the failure. And that's all, that's actually called the pyramid principle. And that's something that Nasser and Sambadi practiced. And that was one of his ways that he was able to really engage the muscles. So, you know, we see a lot of different ideas and stuff by, you know, professional bodybuilders and stuff. Obviously, that doesn't apply to the average Joe. But what does apply to the average Joe or anybody in fitness, whether you're trying to get better swimming, running, weight training, yoga, anything, is that you got to push your body a little bit. You got to push your body to kind of get it to improve. And anyone who's ever competed in a sport knows that, you know, if you train efficiently and train hard, it will translate into how you perform on your meet or during a race or whatever. If you're training for a triathlon, okay, and you're just like, fuck it, I'm not going to like train hard for it. I'm not going to go swimming. I'm not going to go bicycling. I'm not going to go running. I'm just kind of going to do a little bit of everything and kind of, you know, just ease into the actual race. You're not going to do well. But the guy that busts his ass and puts in lots of miles, you know, on the bicycle, puts on a lot of miles running and does a lot of swimming and tries to get faster as a swimmer, he's going to perform much better. So we can apply all this to weight training and kind of like say, you know, hey, what am I noticing at the gym? What do you notice from the guys who you see in the gym every day who still look like shit and aren't improving themselves? Well, I can tell you what they're doing. There's a lot of socializing. And I literally watched, I did like half my workout and there were two guys like talking to each other. One guy was sitting at the machine. The other guy was just sitting there talking to him with his backpack on. He walked into the gym, going to the locker room to put his backpack in the locker, and he ran into his buddy and they sat there and had a conversation. I literally finished half my workout before their conversation was over. So, you know, one of the things that I saw today by Rick Drazen was talking about friends in the gym. And it made me think about this. It's like, do we really want friends in the gym? Or do we just want to put our headphones on and be antisocial? And I thought about it and I said, I used to be that guy. I used to be that social guy in the gym. And I noticed that it would take me an hour and a half to finish my workout. Because I get to the gym, see my buddy on the treadmill, go up to him, say, hey, man, what's up? You had to say hi to your guys that you got to know. Or, you know what I'm saying? Or be rude. And then, like, we'd spot each other. He'd spot me. I'd be, you know, doing bicep curls on one side of the gym. He'd come over and be like, hey, you know, Steve, can you give me a spot? So I'd have to walk all the way across the gym, interrupt my workout. So, you know, these are little ways that you can kind of improve that we don't think about. Like, how long is your workout taking? You need to get in and out of the gym quick. Get your workout in. You only need 45 seconds in between sets. 45 seconds to 60 seconds. Studies have shown that's how long it takes for the oxygen to go back into your muscle and then you can go back again. If you're strength training, obviously you need to take more time. But for most of us, that doesn't apply to us. So why are we taking, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes in between sets? Playing with our phone, you know, going to the, you know, get water, whatever. You need to just nail your workouts through. The intensity needs to be there. You need to be pushing yourself. You need to be increasing the weight, pyramiding up, doing drop sets to really get that burn in the muscle. And then push yourself. You know, because if you're not going to push yourself, you're not going to get better. You're just going to be a typical average Joe in the gym. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, anything to change it up. I mean, the easiest way to fail in the gym is to do the exact same workout every day And then you start to get less intense because it's not as interesting. You stop caring. And then eventually you skip a day. And then we know what that turns into, paying for a membership you don't use. So you always want to switch it up and keep it interesting. I do it all the time, like more than I think most people. I kind of switch up my routines at least every 6 weeks. And sometimes I just don't even stick to a routine. I just, you know, plan something the day that I go. But I mean, I would definitely switch things up. I think, you know, one example of something I'll use, whether it's some type of plateau or just when I want to do something differently, are 4 minute sets. So you can do it with any exercise. Take bench press, for example. So, you know, you'll want to do this 3 weeks in a row. So say it's Monday, because Monday is everybody's chest day. So you go do your bench press, you set your timer for 4 minutes. You do as many reps as you can on your first set. Ideally, you want to fail in your range of, say, 12 to 15. And so you do as many reps as you can, you fail, you rack the bar, and you rest for 20 seconds. You pick it up, and you start going again, and you get in as many as you can. Maybe it's only 8 reps. Then you rack the bar, you rest for 20 seconds again, you pick it up, you might only get 3 reps, and you keep going on, and you do that until the 4 minutes is done. And then your bench press is completely over, okay? So that's your first week. Your second week, you're going to do that exact same 4 minutes, but instead of your rest period being 20 seconds, you're going to cut it down to 15. And then the third week you do it, you're going to cut that rest period down to 10 seconds. From when you rack it to when you start rapping again. And that's just something, it'll completely shock your muscles. You'll feel crazy different as far as pump, soreness, everything will be different than what you're used to. And I'll use that from time to time when I really want to break out of something. So, you know, that's just another one. If you don't usually do supersets, that's a great time to do it. You know, do your biceps and triceps on the same day. And it's a great muscle to superset. You know, do standing barbell curls, and then right away superset skull crushers right after. You could probably use the same weight even. You know, you don't even have to change the weight. So just things like that to keep it fun. You know, there's more drastic things you can do, like switch your actual gym, things like that. Not everybody's willing to do that, you know. So look for little things. Look into new workouts that other people are doing. Watch guys at the gym. And just pick up some new stuff and come on the forums and ask. We always got, you know, guys giving advice on training.
When you get sore from a workout, you ever notice you change up your workout and you get sore? Why is that? Now, a lot of people say, oh, it's lactic acid. But if it was lactic acid, why do you not get sore when you do a consistent workout and you're doing the same workout over and over? But because it's not lactic acid. Lactic acid is not what's making you sore. Your body is releasing inflammation because it's being shocked. So the first reaction that your body does is just like when you have a viral infection, your body raises the body temperature to kill the virus. It's giving yourself a fever. Your body gives you a fever. It's not the virus giving you a fever. Or when you get stung by a wasp, you get an allergic reaction. It's not the wasp that's causing your allergic reaction. It's your body reacting to the wasp sting that gives you the allergic reaction. So getting sore is the same thing. Your body is giving a reaction to your workout. So that's why, like, let's say right now you've been going to the gym for years, and then your buddy's like, hey, go come with me to this boot camp. Let's go do this boot camp like they do in the Army, Marines, or whatever, a boot camp class at, you know, some place. Or a CrossFit workout or something. And you're like, okay, I'll go. So then you go and you do the workout. And, you know, you're not doing as much weight as you are in the gym. But it's just different. You're working out the body differently. And then the next day you're sore. And you're like, what the hell? Why am I sore? Well, it's because your body's getting shocked. So it's a really good idea to apply that to the gym. And one of the ways that you can do that is by simply changing your workout splits every 1 to 2 months. So Change up the order of your workouts. Change up what you do. Go on YouTube. Learn some new workouts that you can apply. Gyms have so much there. You have the hammer machines. You have the regular machines. You have free weights. You've got, you know, all kinds of things. You have pull-ups you can do. You can do just on the floor. You can do push-ups. You can do all kinds of stretches. There's all kinds of different things you can do. And get creative and change up what you're doing. Maybe tomorrow when you go to the gym, you're doing your split, do a machine or do the hammer strength or do something on the free weights that you've never done before. You know, and maybe observe some of the other guys in your gym, what they're doing, and pick some ideas up, because I don't see much creativity in the gym. And I know it's like clockwork. I know these guys because I go to the gym usually the same time every day, and I see the same people doing the same workouts. There's no creativity. They're just doing the same shit over and over. And I know the guys that are there and that are socializing. I know the guys that are there that just do the hammer machine. I know the guys that are there that just do the fucking Smith machine or just do squats or just do curls or whatever. Or they do the rowing machine. I know you know who these people are. You know, see the same person on the elliptical. They're on the same exact machine, the same exact elliptical, or they're doing the treadmill. It's the same pattern every day, and they don't get anywhere. So you got to change it up, guys. It is true. When you change up your workout, you do shock your body, and that is evident because you're going to get sore. So try tomorrow, do something different. Try a different machine to start instead of doing the same thing over and over. All right, guys, I appreciate the show. We're out of time. Again, this episode was dedicated to Trevor and his family, and we give our condolences to them, definitely. And we appreciate all you guys listening, and we'll talk to you guys next time.